Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Aarti Industries Q1 FY27 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Nishid Solanki from CDR India. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us on Aarti Industries Q1 FY27 earnings conference call. Today, we are joined by senior members of the management team, including Mr. Suyog Kotecha, Executive Director and Chief Executive Officer, and Mr. Chetan Gandhi, Chief Financial Officer. We will commence the call with opening remarks from Mr. Kotecha, followed by a Q&A session where management will address participants' queries. Just to share a standard disclaimer, certain statements that may be made in today's conference call may be forward-looking in nature. A disclaimer to this effect has been included in the results presentation shared with you earlier and also uploaded on stock exchange websites. I would now like to invite Mr. Kotecha to share his perspectives. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Aarti Industries Limited's earnings call for the first quarter of the financial year 2027. We will walk you through our financial and strategic performance for the quarter, along with the key milestones we've achieved across our growth initiatives. The quarter was characterized by a challenging macro environment, with persistent geopolitical tensions in the Middle East disrupting global supply chains, increasing freight costs, and driving inflation in crude linked raw material prices. Despite these headwinds, demand across our core products remained broadly stable, supported by our diversified customer base, operational resilience, and market development efforts. Our ability to optimize the product mix in such a constrained macro has resulted in higher margins despite the elevated prices. The West Asia crisis had a direct impact on our energy business, temporarily halting exports to the region. The region's share in our revenues declined from about 15%-2% in this quarter. We successfully redirected a significant portion of these volumes to other markets, limiting the overall business impact. We are working on opportunities to open new fronts for the supply in the region, which we expect to regain the volumes in the upcoming quarters. The quarter also witnessed elevated prices of key raw materials, particularly benzene, sulfur, methanol, and aniline, among others. High prices impacted the purchasing power in specific end applications such as dyes, selected agrochemicals, and polymer compounds. This impacted our volumes during the quarter. However, our robust supply chain and efficient inventory management resulted into market share gains and inventory gains, which contributed to our overall EBITDA growth. Let me now take you through our financial performance for the quarter. I think overall, the company reported revenue of rupees 2,627 crores, representing a growth of 41% YoY, primarily driven by higher input prices passed on to the customers. EBITDA of rupees 385 crores, growing 79% YoY, driven by a combination of product mix optimization, monetization of low-cost inventories. This was also supported by stable demand, improved realizations for select products, and resilient execution despite temporary disruption. Profit after tax of rupees 155 crores, registering a growth of 266% YoY. Working capital requirements expanded during the quarter, driven by higher feedstock prices and increased export volumes. Consequently, debt levels and finance costs rose to support these requirements. Our business continues to be driven by two key segments, the energy business and the non-energy business. In the fuel additive/energy business, demand visibility remains robust. West Asia's contribution to revenues has declined, primarily due to the ongoing regional conflict, thereby impacting sequential volumes. Meanwhile, the other international markets continue to perform well. While our efforts to develop the other potential markets have strengthened our ability to diversify volumes across geographies. We have completed our key fuel additives capacity expansion to 360 KTPA from 290 KTPA, providing additional flexibility to serve newer markets with newer products as demand evolves. Against a volatile backdrop, we maintain an agile strategy, dynamically balancing our volume growth with spread optimization to safeguard the overall profitability despite ongoing fluctuations in feedstock costs, refining margins, and gasoline naphtha crack spreads. Within non-energy business, the demand trends remain mixed. Polymers demand remains soft during Q1, primarily due to weak demand for downstream products in U.S. and China, with recovery expected in Q2. Dyes and pigments continues to face demand headwinds driven by subdued demand amid a high raw material pricing environment and seasonal factors. Pharma demand continued to remain stable, and agrochemical volumes were marginally lower, primarily owing to customer resistance to source at elevated RM prices. Volume recovery here also is expected in Q2, supported by underlying stable demand. The suspension of export tax rebates in China has created favorable opportunities for NCB value chain for us. While short-term export headwinds may persist due to West Asia conflict, we expect sustained volume growth, supported by capacity expansion and deeper market penetration. Overall, our business continues to demonstrate underlying strength anchored by steady volume growth, enhanced operational efficiencies, and disciplined execution of our strategic roadmap. Barring the 3-6 months delay due to labor constraints and war-related issues, our Zone 4 project expansion continues to progress. The project is being commissioned in phased manner this year, FY27, with ramp-up expected over FY28 and FY29. Our PEDA project is progressing through market setting activities and is expected to commercialize very soon. We are also looking to debottleneck our DCB capacity to 140 KTPA backed by volume increase supported by PDCB and downstream demand. In line with our earlier guidance, the FY27 capex remains on track to be within range of ₹700 to 800 crores, with about ₹180 crores already deployed in Q1 FY27. With our major expansion programs nearing completion, the capex intensity is expected to reduce significantly starting next year. Going forward, our capital deployment will pivot toward high-growth, high-return niche projects. Aarti Industries is also accelerating its long-term strategy through high-impact collaborative partnerships and ESG-led growth initiatives. Our JV with Superform for downstream amine derivatives exemplifies this approach, leveraging complementary commercial and manufacturing strengths to unlock significant market potential, reflecting a strategic model we intend to build upon. Strengthening this collaborative approach, our partnership with Superform Chemistries through Origin Chemicals combines our deep chemistry expertise and raw material backward integration with their market application insights to build a differentiated specialty chemical platform. This joint venture remains firmly on track for commissioning in Q2 FY27. We are seeing demand tailwinds in primary end-use application, which provides opportunity for faster ramp-up. Parallelly, our commitment to sustainability and circularity is anchored by our plastic recycling initiative with sustainability through Aarti Circularity that is slated for commissioning in second half of FY27, which utilizes advanced recycling technologies for hard-to-recycle waste streams. Reinforcing this ESG-led direction, we were pleased to achieve the EcoVadis Platinum Rating 2026 during the quarter with a score of 87 out of 100, placing Aarti Industries among the top 1% of the companies globally for the sustainability performance. Our business expansion through our subsidiaries globally, that is in UAE, UK and USA, is progressing well and supporting better growth trajectories in various markets. With an endeavor to expand our global footprints and be a step closer to the potential markets, we have planned to set up a subsidiary in China. This entity shall facilitate our plans to expand our base in one of the large global chemical markets accounting for more than 45% of the global market. Our presence there will also enhance our sourcing capabilities for some of our key raw materials and support a cost and time efficient supply chain arrangement. Execution across all long-term contracts remains stable, continuing to underpin baseline volume growth and safeguard revenue visibility. Despite near-term uncertainties, we remain confident in our long-term growth prospects, supported by our diversified portfolio, expanded capacities, and strong customer relationships. Backed by disciplined capital allocation, continuous process optimization, and deeper integration with global key accounts, our focus on execution ensures we maintain operational resilience in the near term while building long-term sustainable shareholder value. Thank you for your continued trust and support. With that, I would now request the moderator to open the floor for the Q&A session.
Thank you so much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Our first question comes from the line of Rohit Nagraj with 361 Capital. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. Just one question in terms of the Zone 4 CapEx. Given that it's got delayed, however, our FY 2028 guidance remain intact. How confident are we to reach the lower end of guidance, given that at least 6 months delay in this project, and we were probably, you know, considering a decent amount of scale-up happening in FY 2028, which will give additional EBITDA. That's all from my side. Thank you.
Hi, Rohit. No, that's one area where we continue to work upon. In our guidance, we had given the numbers that will come from, you know, the CapEx-led programs, and in CapEx-led, Zone 4 was a significant contributor. In that overall CapEx-led section, you know, the JVs are expected to remain on track. I think Augene and REACL will commission. Even the MPP, the multipurpose plant and the calcium chloride unit in Zone 4 is also expected to commission now, so it should get ramped up. The other blocks, there are five different chemistry blocks in Zone 4, is where we are seeing the delay, and which might lead to a bit slower ramp-up compared to our original anticipation that we had given in our target aspirations for FY 2027-2028. We continue to remain watchful while being fully transparent in terms of where we stand against our strategy. As and when we commission these blocks and we see the ramp-up phase of these units, we will come back and clarify, you know, once we have better understanding of what is the speed of ramp-up of these five different chemistry blocks.
Perfect. Just one question on the numbers. What was the inventory gains during this quarter? Although we have specified the Forex gain, in the, you know, in the press release.
I think, you know, the FX and inventory gains are difficult to estimate correctly, but I think the impact would be anywhere in the range of 50 crores-60 crores. It is difficult to quantify that precisely because a lot of it is also within the quarter, we saw significant volatility, right? We had April and May, where the raw material prices were elevated. We saw towards the end of the May, some part of June, where the prices corrected dramatically, and then again, sort of restarting of conflict in West Asia led to price increase towards June and in July, right? I think this quarter specifically, it would be a bit unfair to sort of quantify the exact amount of inventory such effect. Same thing happened also with currency. I think the April currency versus June currency looked phenomenally different during the quarter. There was tremendous amount of volatility. By and large, given the timing of the raw material purchase and the timing of the product placement, there was a support in the overall EBITDA performance for this quarter.
Perfect. Thanks a lot, and all the best, sir.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Arun Prasath with Avendus Spark. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for the opportunity. Sir, my first question is on the energy segment. We successfully diverted our parcels from Middle East to the new geographies, as you mentioned. How are the new geographies were earlier, you know, fulfilling their fuel additives demand? Is it some other fuel additive or is it our product? Is this sustainable? Can we continue to service both these new markets and as well as the Middle East markets once the crisis is over? Will it mean that our current additional capacity that we have added, will we go back to, say, 190%-100% utilization in the near term? These are the first set of questions on the energy markets from my side.
Thanks, Arun. I think our overall, as I have sort of repeatedly said in the previous quarters, this business is still in this market development phase. We haven't reached the true potential of this business, and it will remain in market development phase for some time to come. That's how the ability to divert the product from one region to another region as and when the new market opens up, you know, gives you a lot of flexibility. In general, our portfolio has become a lot well-balanced in terms of percentage of volume going to U.S., Africa, Europe, Middle East, and in India. There is still a Southeast Asia region which we haven't cracked. Apart from that, in the rest of the global markets, we are pretty well diversified, and in that context, it is giving us ability to move volumes around. To To your question on capacity utilization, I think from a customer and a market development point of view, significant efforts have happened. They are also supported fundamentally by the fact that the demand has been good, right? The gasoline naphtha cracks were strong, and they continue to remain strong, which is where we are, sort of the continued strong demand is also visible in the quarter two. And that's what is giving us confidence that irrespective of the Middle East situation, we should be able to ramp up our utilization levels.
Right. And given our success in this segment, are you worried that at some point of time, competition will also try to replicate? Right now, I believe competitive intensity is less in this product, not as a fuel additives, but in this product. But when the time comes, what would be our strategy to retain market share? Can we become more cost competitive? Can we increase our distribution? How are we going to retain this once competition decides to come and attack us?
Yeah. So I would say there is already significant competition in this product. I think there are more than two or three players in India which have entered this market, and there are more than two or three players in China which are currently playing in this market. I think we continue to maintain our market leadership position. And we will continue to do so. The strategy involves, you know, multiple aspects. I would not go into the details, but it includes all aspects, including new products in the portfolio, differentiated products built for specific markets, specific customers. It also includes global supply chain planning and footprint optimization. And it also includes unique distribution strategy linked to specific customers, right? So I think, and cost remains sort of in our DNA. We can very confidently say that we will be top decile in terms of cost structure for the entire product portfolio that we are trying to develop as part of this segment. So it's a combination of multiple aspects. Competition already exists, and we try to do our best to retain the market leadership position.
Understood. Now that we are close to commission our Aujin, any kind of numbers would you like to quantify? What is it, our steady state expectations on this? How soon we can see it reflecting in our quarterly numbers, and how long it will take to ramp up to the steady state?
So I think from an operations point of view, it will definitely commission, I think this or next month. I think the commissioning activities are ongoing as we speak. The first sale of the raw material to the joint venture has already happened. We also see traction in terms of order book of the product that we plan to produce in this joint venture. So within this quarter, we should start seeing operations and ramping up happening. Within first sort of 1 to 2 years, we should be able to reach to a decent utilization level for the entire capacity that we have built. From a financial standpoint, being 50-50, it will consolidate at PAT level. So the numbers at PAT level will start becoming visible. The meaningful difference may come, we would say, around few quarters down the line, 2 to 4 quarters down the line. But it should start becoming visible from this quarter onwards.
Any revision to the steady state revenue for a JV at current prices?
I think we had projected 300 to 400 crores. I think we will maintain that range for the joint venture to start with. As and when we complete the ramp up in this quarter and we stabilize the plant operations, we will come back with a firmer estimate for the JV.
Finally, on Zone 4, you said that bunch of the chemistry is it's delayed. Is it anyway linked to the agri markets, and hence the recovery is also will track the agri market, turning around?
I don't think the delay is anything to do with market or linked to a particular agri segment. It's a pure project execution challenge, which we faced. Primarily started around March-April timeframe, where there was a huge labor shortage driven by LPG issue, and then consequent elections and the monsoon triggered few delays. But at the same time, I think multipurpose plant is undergoing commissioning again as we speak. The product out is expected within the month of August. and we will announce commissioning post, first product is out from the plant. The other blocks of different chemistries will get gradually commissioned, as we had indicated earlier. The product mix that we are currently starting with is very well diversified. It has mix of agro, it has mix of pharma, it has mix of coatings, it has mix of polymers. And we remain to have a different sort of segregated differential end market exposure for the overall Zone IV capabilities. It will not be heavy towards one particular end market. That's the current strategy. So the ramp-up is linked to project execution, is not necessarily linked to end market at this stage.
Understood. Thank you very much for answering all the questions. All the best.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Aditya Khetan with SMIFS Institutional Equities. Please go ahead.
Thank you, sir, for the opportunity. So just a couple of questions. So onto the price hikes, when we look in this quarter, across segments, we would have taken price hikes. But when I look at the dyes, pigments, and the pharma segment, there the price hikes number look much higher compared to energy segment or the polymer additive business. Are we expecting like this price hikes to roll back going ahead, suppose if the base commodities prices reverse? And what would be the sustainable number we can work with this going ahead? And secondly, sir, when we look at the overall volume performance, exports during the quarter have taken a sharp dip. How you see the domestic volumes picking up in the coming quarters? And how we see for FY27 and FY28?
So I think the first thing, the increase that you see in pharma and in dyes and pigments, it has a combination of two factors. One is, of course, the raw material inflation and passing on that to customers. The second is the NCB chain forms a significant part of these two end segments. And in NCB chain, the China's VAT removal led to changing of the pricing regime for the products in the entire value chain. So you will definitely see volatility linked to raw materials. As the raw materials softens in future, pricing, of course, will get corrected to some extent. But there's some element which is also linked to some of the actions Chinese government took, which might sustain. So the answer on pharma and dyes and pigments, I hope you got it. There are two factors, one of which is linked to raw materials. The second is not linked to raw materials. I think on the exports for the quarter actually were very robust. 59% of revenue actually came from exports. And we are seeing good traction in exports. The volumes are expected to go up in Q2 in exports. It's just that now our footprint, our supply chain in terms of export is changing quite dramatically. And towards longer voyage destinations, especially places like U.S. and America, in that context, the recognition of revenue is linked to the Incoterms, right? And many of the sales which are on DAP basis, especially in U.S., I think you will see quarter-on-quarter volatility in terms of production numbers and the exports from India versus when the revenues are recognized. But over the quarters, it should smoothen out.
Got it. So my second question, so during the quarter, like a 380 crore EBITDA and stripping off the 47 crore Forex benefit and some inventory gains, whatever the number could be. So we are still at around like 300 to around 310 crore EBITDA. That could be a guess. How you see like to reach 1800 crore EBITDA by FY28? Ideally, this number should have been on base business and plus and not taking the inventory benefits. It should have been at around 350 crore. But we are still lower by some around 20% on that. How you see this trajectory moving and what would be that particular quarter which can change that trajectory going ahead?
So I think FX gain to some extent is a combination of accounting and the combination of volatility during the quarter, right? And that's sort of part of a routine business. I think in the coming quarters, as the volume recovery happens and potentially if there is a regime where the pricing is maintained, throughout the quarter without significant change, everyone should be able to see the underlying business performance in terms of what's the true potential of the existing asset. And that itself should sort of direct in terms of what's the EBITDA trajectory that we are on.
Got it. Got it. So just one last question. I missed your opening remarks on the volumes front, volume numbers during the quarter.
So volumes on an energy business were down 17% on a quarter-on-quarter basis, and on non-energy business, they were down by 7% on a quarter-on-quarter basis. On overall organization level, they were roughly 12% down on quarter-on-quarter basis.
Now, we have stopped giving the actual numbers like we were actually mentioning it earlier in our presentation, sir.
So we are giving numbers at two broad application levels, which is energy and non-energy. And we are also showing utilization numbers specific to value chain in a relatively narrow range, which we feel gives good enough indication of where the assets are. The actual sales numbers is something that we have removed from the slides because I think they were getting utilized in a situation which was not favorable for the company. But we feel this gives good enough indication. I think at an overall company level, you have a volume trajectory. Within energy, non-energy, you have exact volume growth numbers, and you will also have utilization ranges for all the major value chains.
Got it, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Viraj Vajratkar from Kotak AMC. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hey, thank you. So first on the chlorotoluene, so what that is part of the high chemistry, I think, in Zone 4. So what is exactly the execution issues? Like, why is the chlorotoluene? I mean, we had started it, we had mentioned about it, I think, in 2024, 2025. I just wanted to get some sense on what is happening in the chlorotoluene space.
As I just said, I think we changed our strategy for Zone 4 around one and a half years back, where we made the entire chain capable of producing different chemistries. So we have five different chemistry blocks. And yes, chlorotoluene was the original intention, and the asset still retains the capability to manufacture the entire chlorotoluene chain if we want to. But now the assets are designed in a way where they can produce multiple other chemistries as long as the fundamentals of asset capability sort of deliver the performance that is expected for the finished product. That's one. Second, I think the exact nature of the challenge right now where we are is practically all of the equipment are erected. 97% of the equipment are erected for those blocks. In terms of piping, 85% of piping is complete. I think this is one area where it requires a huge amount of manpower, both piping and the final insulation work. And that is where we faced a bit of a challenges, as I mentioned in the March, April, May kind of a time frame. But we are back to full manpower in Zone 4, and hence, hopefully no further delays, and we should be able to commission it as we had indicated during this financial year itself.
Okay, sure. And in terms of the OGM JV, so basically, I think that is more for the amine chemistry. So which end segments within the amine chemistry, the end product segment, end customer sectors, what are you targeting? And roughly, would this amine chemistry have a little bit of a higher margin versus the benzene chemistries, which right now probably would be in the tune overall at the group level, what we think?
So I think there are two dominant end markets, coatings and ag. Coatings is expected to be a much larger market and mostly India-focused market for the chemistry, which is targeted as part of that unit. So it also gives us exposure to a very different end market, which is helpful. And yes, the profitability expectation is it will typically deliver higher margin profile compared to our existing product portfolio.
Oh, right. Sure. And one last question in terms of MMA. So how has been the markets, especially, I mean, the base market of Middle East as well as the replacement markets, how has been the market's ability to uptake your MMA products, especially in terms of if any price hikes have to be taken, and the slightly longer term plans in terms of going back I mean, how fungible are the markets in terms of taking up? Would you shift back to Middle East once things settle? So what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I think we remain very active in the market. Overall, the market has been pretty strong, as I said, linked to the end market profile. Given decent strength in gasoline naphtha crack, the pull for this fuel additives business remains very strong. I'm purposefully saying not only MMA because we are trying to broaden the basket of the products that we supply as part of this application. And going forward, you will see more and more we talking about fuel additives than specifically MMA. So the global market demand linked to the end market characteristics remains very strong. As and when the market opens up, we will definitely sort of the idea is not to then necessarily shift volume, but increase capacity utilization, which is what should be visible in this quarter.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Sanjesh Jain with ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my questions. First, on the energy side of it, how are we seeing the gasoline naphtha side across the market? I know Middle East hasn't been great, but what's been spread in, say, Europe, US, and Africa, the other three key regions for us?
No, overall, at the gasoline naphtha level, the cracks have averaged in the range of $15 to $18 per barrel, which are pretty healthy. And this is a global market. And at this levels of cracks, the demand for the product is pretty robust.
So we are back to that pre-war kind of a spread in gasoline naphtha. We were at around 15 to 20. We are back to that range.
Yeah, it remains very volatile. Look, I think we are living in a world where the daily price movement is plus minus 5%, right? So I think for me, generalizing it would be unfair. But yes, at an overall average level, the cracks have remained at around $15 to $20 per barrel, which is healthy.
When we talk about the fuel additive, what other, apart from MMA, are we looking at? Because we are now talking like a portfolio approach. So what are the other products we have identified or working on R&D within the fuel additive space?
Yes, I think we've talked about it in the past in previous investor calls. I think the expansion of the product portfolio in this segment started some time back. We have just initiated some of the development efforts and the sales efforts for the new products that are getting added, which will sort of help us expand the fuel additives business going forward. Of course, they are not at a very significant volume levels right now, but the idea is to scale up these new products as well and then broaden from sort of one product dependency to a multi-product fuel additives portfolio over the course of next 12 months.
So can you name the products?
At this stage, we won't name the products.
Okay, okay. And how many will be there in terms of count?
I mean, at any point in time in our pipeline, there are 3 to 5 products.
A 3 to 5 product. Got it. But they will be all in the octane booster itself, or you're looking at the other end-use application as well?
It will broadly fall into category of fuel additives.
Okay. Not necessarily an octane booster.
Yeah.
Got it. On the overall, with the crude coming down and we are facing a situation where raw material prices eventually will come down, are we looking at behavior from the customer side where they are looking to destocking in a falling scenario, and there could be a period where some of the gains may also go off, or we may have an inventory loss like we had an inventory gain this time? Are we looking at such scenario in the immediate term? Because crude has sharply reversed, but I know it's super volatile.
So look, I think that risk always remains in a business when you're operating in crude-linked raw material and the product environment. I think that risk will always remain. What we can do, as a company is to be very agile. So especially most of our domestic raw material procurement, the pricing pass-through is relatively quick, right? We typically won't have more than, 7 to 15 days inventory wherever we are purchasing raw material in the domestic market. I think in the imported raw material, which is where we tend to have 1 to 1.5 months of inventory, ideally in stock or over waters, that's where this price fluctuation sometimes could impact us. We have put in strategies in place, including combination of forward booking of customer orders, including some hedging strategies to minimize that loss. But that risk will always remain and we actively manage it.
Got it. One interesting comment you made that if margin remain at this level, we will see a actual potential of the business. No, are we seeing these margins improving across the isomers of the benzene, and that's where the true profitability of RT will come out? Is that the way to read that statement?
No, I think so. Different value chains will have a different story. I think NCB value chain, which has suppressed margins for a very long time, has recovered in the margin in the last quarter. DCB chain has always had sort of decent margins. So DCB in hydrogenation has always had decent margins. I think NT remained suppressed for a while, and it is linked to a isomer imbalance that we have faced over the course of last 2-3 years. We have put in some innovative strategies to rebalance that portfolio. And in that context, we hope to achieve better margin profile in that chain going forward. The overall fuel additive segment, also the broadening of market, customer, and now product footprint, we hope to gain a little bit on the margin profile on that front. PDA chain is one where we structurally remain weak because of our technological disadvantage. And there we are trying to work on cost efficiency to figure out how to improve our margin profile. So the nature of improvement or strategic initiatives across the value chain and their characteristics differ, but the objective is to expand both the volume and the margin profile across all of these chains.
One last on the zone 4, particularly on the chlorotoluene and MPP side. Where are we in the product approval cycle from the customers now that the projects are slightly delayed? But from an approval perspective, product development perspective, we have a line of sight what product we will produce first and whom are we selling?
Yeah. So I think in most cases, we do have already a target customers identified, and the qualification of the product from our pilot facility is also done with most of the customers. However, these customers will also ask for a commercial batch qualification. So whenever the unit gets commissioned, there will be a commercial batch taken and there will be requalification done based on that commercial batch. And that will happen only when the assets are commissioned. But relatively speaking, for most of these cases, the initial demonstration of technology in pilot and getting the product qualified through our pilot plants, that has already been achieved in most cases.
How many products are we looking to start with, say, by end of FY28?
I think by FY28, we are talking about anywhere in the range of 25 to 30 products. I think within this year, we are looking at anywhere between 5 to 10 products.
That's clear. Thanks for answering all those questions and best of luck for the coming quarters.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Archit Joshi with Nuvama Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Thanks a lot for the opportunity, sir. So first question on the NCB chain. I think we have consistently seen a healthy utilization level in the last couple of years, and we are also speaking of a possible tailwind that we are witnessing today because of the tax rebate issue. And the commonality here that I find is the nitration chain. And since we are already started witnessing a healthy margin profile, should that warrant for a capacity expansion in here, given that this portfolio is uplifting our margins at this point in time?
Yeah, so I think the assets are actually capable of delivering slightly more volumes. We are evaluating minor debottlenecking projects to take up the capacity in that chain. At the same time, look, the dominant end market there is pharmaceuticals, right? Typically, paracetamol is one of the largest end user of this product. And in that context, we're also watching out for consumption potential within Indian market for this particular chain. We will be pretty aggressive as soon as we see a potential to sell more in India. We will go for the debottlenecking efforts. And that's very much possible within existing assets. So that remains on our radar. But at this point in time, we feel it's some time away from demand going to a level where we need asset expansion.
Got it, sir. Another one, just in the last 12 months, we have seen multiple closures or capacities being idle on the petchem side, be it ethylene or naphtha. I mean, the global majors like even ExxonMobil and South Korean companies have sort of reject their entire capacities of steam cracker or naphtha, ethylene. And the numbers that come out in terms of closures are out of proportions, right? I mean, we're talking about 10, 15 odd million tons of capacities either being idle or out of the system. And knowing that this directly impacts in a way the spread of naphtha and gasoline, because naphtha also is quite conducively used in making ethylene. Do we see that there could be a shift on a sustainable basis, not in the time of this volatility, that it could materially make an advantage to our MMA portfolio as spreads could possibly become more sustainable? Do you see that on a mid to long-term basis?
It's difficult to predict at this stage from a long-term point of view. I think I would answer the question more broadly for chemical industry. I think chemical industry has gone through a little bit of turbulent times over the last 3 to 4 years, right? Especially after the bumper COVID years, there was a pretty extended phase where margins profile were squeezed for most of the chemical industry. I think the industry is, as a consequence of that, today you're seeing what you described, right? A significant rationalization of capacities, especially in Europe, in Northeast Asia, to some extent, the pace of expansion in China has also slowed down across many of the value chains. And if this behavior continues, we potentially could see a post-2028-2029 kind of a time frame where demand kind of picks up a pace and it starts reaching closer to capacities, and the utilization level starts becoming healthy at a global level. We could fundamentally see restructuring of the margin profile at an industry level. But that's a personal hypothesis, and I guess we have to wait at least 2 or 3 more years to see if it pans out.
Right, sir. Thank you. Thanks a lot and all the best.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management will be able to address all the questions from the participant, we request you to kindly limit your question to 2 to 3 questions per participant. If you have a follow-up question, please rejoin the queue. Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Abhijit Akella with KIE. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good afternoon. Thank you so much. So first, just on the quarterly EBITDA run rate, given that this quarter we did have significant benefits from the inventory side as well as the forex side, what should a reasonable number to sort of expect for the upcoming quarter be? I'm just looking really short term given the very volatile environment, but should we expect that things will revert back to the 4Q run rate, or do we think that this 1Q run rate could still be more or less sustainable?
I think I would say that it's not far away. We should, given the kind of volatility that we have seen, where there's a plus minus 15% to 20% correction happening on a monthly basis, I would again hesitate and to hazard a guess. But what I can say is that some of the gains which we may not get, which are linked to inventory, could be potentially compensated because of the volume growth. I think that's how we are looking at the near-term quarter.
Okay, understood. And then just to clarify that the JVs, Augene and ReRT, will not be part of the EBITDA number, right? So your guidance of 1,800 crores is excluding these JVs, is that correct?
No, so I think that 1,800 guidance included the EBITDA, especially for Augene JV, because we expected it to start contributing by that time frame. The other JV, we did not anticipate it will start contributing meaningfully before FY27-28 time frame. So that guidance did include Augene's EBITDA. How to report that going forward, we will come with a plan, but that profitability was included in our guidance.
Got it. And just the last thing from me, one is, the non-energy volumes, the quarter-on-quarter softness we've seen, is that again impacted by the Middle East or something else? And then just on this 360,000 ton expansion now of the fuel additives, how long do you expect to sort of fully use up that expanded capacity?
So I think on a non-energy business, the volume drop you saw was a combination of supply chain and in some cases, purchasing behavior getting delayed, right? Because of sort of high price environment in segments where there is some little bit of inventory wiggle room available, people tend to delay the purchase decision. So it was a combination of the two. We expect that the non-energy volumes also to pick up during the quarter. And sort of given the end consumption demand remains pretty stable, we are not seeing any changes on that front. That business is not impacted significantly due to Middle East in general, because the Middle East exposure of that segment is pretty low. On the capacity utilization for fuel additives, I think we are ramping up the capacity as we speak. And we feel we might be able to reach high levels of utilization in this quarter itself.
Okay, great. Thank you so much and all the best.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Surya Narayan Patra with PhillipCapital India. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity and congrats for the strongest ever kind of sales number that we have put out in the quarter. So, first question is about gross margin. So, despite of the inventory markup benefit and the INR depreciation benefit, we have seen a kind of sequential decline in the gross margins. So what is the factor that can be attributed to this sequential decline, sir?
So as I said, I think this quarterly gross margin numbers, I would kind of at this point in time park it. At an overall EBITDA percentage level, we pretty much remain on track in terms of what we need to deliver. It's a combination of multiple things, right? As I said, within a quarter and within every month, when we have seen plus minus 15% price volatility, I think taking a gross margin level for that quarter sometimes can tend to give a wrong picture. There were multiple factors in play. The timing of raw material purchase, the timing of product placements, the way the Forex moved within the quarter, the freight expenses, also lower volume leading to other consequences in terms of, in some cases, the higher operating cost, but at the same time, at an overall level, lower freight cost. So I think if you start putting together combination of all of these factors, you lead to where you are. But we would say that it's not a reflective of a steady state performance.
Okay. But one should not believe this way that the kind of a rise in the product prices would be lower than the rise in the kind of input prices. That may not be the reason, right?
No, I think typically what happens is the deltas are relatively in absolute numbers, right? Not, the chemical business runs on absolute deltas, not on percentage margin business.
Correct.
So, and that's the behavior we anticipate will continue going forward.
Okay, sure. Second point is on the MMA side. Since we are kind of entering into a seasonal weak zone, period zone, so what is the kind of a market outlook that you are currently having in terms of while you are quite optimistic about the kind of expansion and achieving the kind of adequate utilization number, but in a weak season which is coming up, any sense that you are having for that MMA outlook?
So in general, for a fuel additive as a basket and as a segment, yes, the winter seasons are a bit weak, but typically we start see, cracks tapering down and demand starting to get impacted around sort of end of October, November, December kind of a time frame. At this point in time, the traction remains pretty strong. We are prepared for that winter downturn. And in that context, the entire mitigation strategy in terms of how should we think about volume placements during the lean season is something also that we are evaluating. But yes, there would be some seasonality to this particular business.
Sure. Just last one point from my side. About the polymer supply, where the volume looks really low, is there anything to do with supply to Middle East getting impacted and hence the kind of low volume? Or it is something else, sir?
No, I think that business has very limited exposure to Middle East, so I don't think there is any impact due to Middle East issues on that segment. In general, I think the Q4 of the last financial year, there were a lot of bulk shipments that were done to the customers, especially in U.S. In that context, you know, the extent of shipment that happened in particular that segment within first quarter were low. We expect it to pick up in the second quarter, and at an overall year basis, we think actually we should be able to see the growth as far as the polymer segment is concerned.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you, sir. Wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Tushar Raghatate with Omega Portfolio Advisors. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity. So I just wanted to know the geographical distribution in the energy business, the average distribution.
So again, I won't give exact numbers. I would say we are well balanced across geographies. So, U.S., Europe, Middle East, Africa, and India. I think it's well balanced. It's not tilted towards one particular geography. Quarter-on-quarter, we do see volatility where one geography tends to pick up significant share. But if you take at sort of year average numbers, then we are pretty well balanced across all the geographies.
Okay. So do you see the voyage time increase has impacted the margin profile in the energy business?
So I think the voyage time doesn't impact the margin profile of the business as such, but it does impact the accounting of the overall business, right? As I said, you know, in many cases, the business happens on DAP terms, and in that context, given the 2- to 3-month voyage time, especially for material going to U.S., there is a delayed revenue recognition for some of the volumes.
Fair enough, sir. And suppose you mentioned that, you know, the EBITDA run rate would be maintained. So considering that, I think the numbers are kind of achievable, the guided number. So just wanted to know, like this run rate of 16% odd EBITDA margin, considering the energy business volatility, is this the new normal of with the business?
So we did not say the EBITDA run rate can be maintained. Of course, I think we feel at this point in time that there are two factors, right? There is sort of volume gain, which we are confident of and which is visible. I think the pricing margin and inventory is anybody's guess at this point in time. And frankly, at a management level, it would be difficult to hazard a guess. It is linked to ultimately how the West Asia situation settles and also how rapid is the change in the pricing movement, right? If it's gradual, then of course, the impact will come over time. If it's sharp, then depending on the time when it happens, we might have to look at some of the inventory cost. So that's one. So volumes growth, we are confident. I think on inventory slash margins, you know, we remain a little bit dependent on the macro situation. Sorry, I missed the second part of your question.
Okay. Fair enough, sir. Yeah.
Okay.
Good, thanks. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management will be able to address all the questions from the participant, we request you to kindly limit your question to two questions per participant. If you have a follow-up question, please rejoin the queue. Our next question comes from the line of Gagan Dixit with Elara Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question, sir. Sir, I have the question regarding the MMA. So given the U.S. is the largest gasoline user in the world, so in case of any favorable ties between the India and U.S., so how much is the target addressable market that as per your estimate, is the U.S. for the MMA? That's my first question, is it?
So we won't, give that number, but then I think we've described this multiple times. I think the overall fuel additive market is in millions of tons, right? So it is very unfair to say that for a particular product, what is the market potential. As I said, we are going through a market development journey, and there is a phase of adoption by customers of this specific unique product, which can potentially either augment or replace some of the existing fuel additives that they are using. The upper side potential is in millions of tons, and we don't feel it's realistic to talk about it given we are in relatively early stage of market development journey for this product. Also, the trade flows are pretty dynamic, right? I think the overall oil and gas industry in the world is one of the most highly traded industry, and how the flows, physical flows move from, you know, either Middle East to Africa or Europe to Africa or North America to Latin America. Where the product, our product gets consumed versus where the end gasoline gets consumed, there also there is a significant amount of disconnect. And that's where sometimes this analysis tend to give a wrong picture. At this point in time, the only thing we can say is that, as I said, we have well-balanced customer and market portfolio, and we have potential upside in terms of discovering newer customers and newer markets.
And so follow-up question is, what is your advantage in the MMA versus the typically the Chinese players? I mean, in terms of any chemistry, quality, logistics, anything? And also, sir, typically I've seen that you are continuously increasing the MMA capacity, that's the brownfield expansion. So what is the potentially you can increase the capacity at maximum, the MMA, that without going for any new greenfield something?
So I think, look, we recently completed our capacity expansion of 360 KT. Again, I would emphasize the capacities for the overall fuel additives block doesn't mean necessarily linked to one particular product. And that's the capacity which we tend to stabilize over the course of next 12 months. We don't have any restriction or any limits to how much capacity we can increase. But the idea is to demonstrate a good capacity utilization for this recent expansion over the course of next 12 months and then take decision going forward.
And so my second question is about the demand visibility across the end market. As you are now serving the fuel additives, agrochem, pharma, polymers, new platforms like battery chemicals, defense. So which end markets are showing the strongest long-term demand visibility for you? And how is RT choosing where to allocate the future CapEx? Just I want to understand regarding that.
So I think in most end markets, I think we are seeing pretty steady demand. I think agro, the demand growth is actually relatively stable. Polymer, we are seeing very strong demand, particularly in the end markets linked to EVs and automotive. On pharma, the demand growth remains pretty robust. I think dyes and pigment was one area where there was sort of softening of the demand trend. Overall globally, and that's reflected in the growth that the segment has seen over the course of the last 3 to 4 years. Energy as a segment has a huge growth potential, but the demand can be volatile given the nature of the business. So different end markets are exhibiting different trends. Our selection of opportunity is linked to ultimately our capability to deliver value to the customers and the return profiles of that particular opportunity. And that's how we are selecting our growth areas. So some of the molecules, forward-looking molecules that we are trying, for example, in battery applications or in defense, are driven by that in terms of, you know, are we able to add significant value? Are we able to build a differentiated value proposition where we can be globally cost competitive and it can scale, right, in terms of size of the business and at a decently attractive return on capital? That's what drives our decision making in terms of shortlisting future growth areas.
Yeah. Thanks for giving the elaborate answers. So that's from my end.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Ojas Sawan with Haitong Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity, sir. So one question from my end is the forex gain that we've seen this quarter has been significantly higher than the previous quarters. So first, what was the reason for this, and how do we see this going ahead into Q2?
Chetan, you want to take that?
Yeah. So it's a combination of multiple stuff. So one is, if you look at it, there has been volatility both in Q4 and Q1 on the currencies. So there were instances wherein we sourced imported material at a higher price, but we saw rupee appreciating and correcting significantly in April month, and we got an opportunity to kind of square up the position at a lower rate, which resulted in the forex gain. Plus, the exports which happened during the quarter were able to, I mean, we saw rupee ranging from a level of 92-97 in the quarter. So wherever the opportunities are there, we've looked to capitalize on those. I'm not saying that we can always keep on doing it, but we've been able to hit some of the right boxes in terms of covering it up. So that's broadly on the forex. There's an element of inventory benefit blended into the forex related to the import transaction, but yeah, that's where it is. But yeah, going forward, committing to a number of gain or loss will be driven by a lot of other factors.
So, sir, should we read this more from an operational perspective only?
You consider this as a part of the operational element only. And also, there's an accounting treatment in terms of at what rate the transactions are recorded in the books, what is the closing rate. So there's also a mark-to-market element comes in. So I would assume that the better way to look at it is consider this as a part of more of an operating profit only.
Understood. Understood. That's it from my end. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Prateek Dugar with IntelSense. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Thank you for the opportunity, sir. My question was more on a macro development which is happening in Southeast Asia. So we have seen structural rationalization of the naphtha-fed steam crackers, particularly in Japan and South Korea. And this, it is expected to persist through 2028, 2030, that sort of. And based on that, ethylene prices in the international market, that has also exploded. So my question was that given our own ethylation unit at Dahej, do we see this as a long-term opportunity to leverage our contracts with the customer, like $150 billion contract which you had with an innovator, and another long-term opportunity for ethylated intermediates like OEA and the 26 MEA that we do?
Yes, I think these products are part of our strategic focus areas. In most cases, our contracts are passed through as far as the ethylene pricing is concerned. So in that context, sort of our margin profile is relatively secured on those product portfolio. I think so volatility in ethylene sometimes does affect on a quarterly basis because depending on the type of a contract we are seeing, sometimes there's a quarterly price pass-through, sometimes there is a monthly price pass-through. So that near-term volatility might be there, but from a long-term basis, in general, for most of these products that you mentioned, in a significant number of cases, ethylene prices are typically passed through. So it doesn't impact us directly as such. It, in fact, gives us a little bit more robust volume and margin visibility.
Okay, sir. But apart from the pricing, because the crackers are coming down in Japan and South Korea, so their capacity is coming down. So do we see this as an opportunity for us? That was the question.
But these products are not produced in that region. I think the products that you have mentioned dominantly are produced either in India, China, or Europe, right? These are the only three regions where these products are produced. I think Korea or Japan or Thailand, for that matter, do not have any capacities for these products.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Archit Joshi with Nuvama Asset Management. Please go ahead.
All three chemistry highlighted. Yeah.
Archit, you may please proceed ahead with the question.
Yeah. Sir, so just one question, sir, on the SABIC backward integration. Where are we in that journey, sir, if you can give us some color on that, and when do we expect those benefits to start accruing regards to the backward integration that we are planning?
Yeah. So we don't talk about a specific customer name linked to a specific contract. I think there's one long-term contract that we announced which was linked to backward integration in the last quarter. If your question is with reference to that, I think we are in the project execution phase. I think the civil and the building work is currently ongoing. The commissioning of that project is expected around September to October 2027 time frame.
Got it. Thank you. That's all.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today. I now hand the conference over to the management for the closing remarks. Thank you and over to you, team.
Thank you. We appreciate your ongoing support and participation in today's call. I think despite the prevailing headwinds in the global macro environment, our disciplined approach allows us to manage through this phase effectively. We remain committed to our overall growth trajectory and look forward to engaging with you again. Please feel free to connect with us for any follow-up queries. Thank you once again.
Thank you so much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Aarti Industries Limited, that concludes today's conference. Thank you for joining us and you may now disconnect your lines.